Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 728, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Tricky Treats. This program is being recorded on October 30th of the year 2010. And once again, and for the first time in about a half a year, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Barry and the Boys, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, and also the maven who presides over the Mad Cow Morning News, and now entering into yet again with another foray into the world of video production. This is Daniel Hopsicker with the New American Drug Lords just out. Welcome back to our airwaves, Daniel.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave.
You have been a busy fellow, as per usual, but even more so than usual.
Well, I could have had this show out a year ago if I had was just going to do an hour. I don't know how, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to get back to this material. So I wanted to put in half of what I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've done. So it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, and it took forever. I mean, it's a two-year undertaking. It would have been much quicker if I had help, but I did it all myself. I, wrote it, produced it, and both of those things I'm able to do, pretty quick fashion. But editing, oh boy, I had to edit this, and editing is harder than writing is, because you're worried about, I think more elements. I mean, writing is just words on paper, and you get a certain rhythm, and you hit a certain tone, and then you're gone. You're off. But boy, I'll tell you, editing video, it's all about beats, and cutting on the beat, and. But I'm here, dude.
All righty, and so is New American Drug Lords, too. Now, this is a video that you've obviously been working very hard on over the last half year or so. And really, the effort has gone back way before then. But in terms of immediate production, about the last half year or so. And it deals with what and whom, Daniel? Who are the New American? I mean, obviously, well, I'm asking for a synoptic presentation of something that even in 2 hours and 15 minutes was something of a distillate. But who are the New American Drug Lords? And, oh, by the way, let me also just very briefly fill in the audience, because there are always new people tuning in on who you are and what you've done. Daniel Hopsicker is an investigative journalist. He began by taking a look into one of the top Central Intelligence Agency drug smugglers, Barry Seal, although perhaps to characterize him in that way is to understate the case, because Barry Seal had his fingers in just about every covert action pie for a good half, well, not a half century, but the better part of a half century, including apparently the assassination of President Kennedy, then following some of those evidentiary tributaries and some of the intelligence community air proprietaries, CIA and otherwise, you came across some people who were associates of Mohammed Atta and some of the other 9/11 hijackers. And lo and behold, down there at Venice Airport, Huffman Aviation, the places where a lot of the 9/11 hijackers infiltrated, trained, and basically staged their attack on America, they were working with elements associated with these very same New American Drug Lords, including people who draw U.S. government salaries. So that's who Daniel Hopsicker is, and that is how he comes upon the New American Drug Lords. But I don't know anything more specific about the new video. Daniel, who are the New American Drug Lords, in a nutshell?
They're the old American Drug Lords.
Uh-huh. And there was meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
I got to tell you right at the top, the title of the show is a misnomer.
Okay.
The name's changed, the organization does not.
Uh-huh.
One of the principals in the organization headed a company called Genesis, Genesis Aviation, and Genesis Intermedia, and Genesis Intermedia was incorporated by the lawyer for Barry Seal. The ties go around and round and round and all come back to the same people, same group of people. And I actually believe at this point, well, for example, okay, a couple, first of all, if you were to hear for the first time today that the guy that owned the flight school, that the the terrorists went to, or the two terrorists that took down the World Trade Center, certainly. The guy that owned that flight school had had his Learjet busted with 43 pounds of heroin 3 weeks after Muhammad Atta arrived.
This being Wally Hilliard, go ahead.
Would you not call for an investigation? Would you not say, what's up with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. I mean, the situation literally speaks for itself. His plane was busted with just that, and yet, as far as I know, Wally Hilliard didn't even get a wrist slap, let alone any kind of serious adjudication.
That's correct. So that's the first thing I want to bring up, is the reason you heard that only from me is because I have broken one of the big taboos. Okay, this is a taboo subject. The drug trade is the biggest industry in terms of foreign trade on the face of the planet, or you could argue that it's number two after weapons. I mean, you know, I've heard it both ways.
Well, oil's pretty far up there, too, but yes, drugs
is
huge.
Dude. It's bigger than oil.
It's big. It sure is huge.
Do you know what? People spend more money worldwide on drugs than they do on food.
Yeah, well, they tend to sell for a lot more per unit volume.
So, I mean, but, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's a little bigger or a little smaller. You know, I mean, it's a huge industry, and it's stocked. I mean, you can find drugs anywhere you can find Charmin, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, not that, Daniel, one of the things about the drug trade, too, it's not only extremely lucrative, but it's off the books. There's no taxes. All of these other things are taxes. The drug trade is completely off the books. Plus, it's so beautifully suited. If you want to knock over some small country, you send a couple of guys over the border with suitcases full of pure heroin or cocaine and hook them up with a drug trafficking syndicate, which already has paramilitary capabilities, and away they go. You've got millions of dollars, guns, and people who know how to use both.
They're not going to... Well, a friend of mine, who apparently spent 35 years working at the NSA or something like it, and retired when he was offered a position involving drugs that he did not feel like compromising himself with, told me straight out, they're never going to give this up. They're never going to give it up. If he asked me, what do you want? I mean, this goes back 9 years ago when I got into this subject area. I had finished an hour and a half show on Barry Seal, a documentary, and I was still in Newport Beach, California. I was still a California boy, and good Lord, there's so many times when I wish I still was. But this guy told me that he was going to bring someone by to see me, and the guy he brought by to see me, I swear to God, it was raining, it was February, but he was wearing a trench coat.
Really, almost like the spy versus spy stereotype.
Totally. I mean, he had a trench coat on. I swear to God.
All righty.
So he watched about 20 minutes of my show. He was introduced to me, by the way, as the special advisor. I can remember this word for word. The special advisor to the president of a large Midwestern institution.
All righty.
Specific enough. So he watched 20 minutes of the show, and I'm sitting there going, this guy's going to jump down my throat. He was a distinguished-looking man with impeccable manners.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd seen enough after about 20, 25 minutes, and he said, shut it off. And I thought he's going to leave. What do you mean? The CIA smuggles drugs. You know, what are you smoking? Blah, blah, blah. Didn't say that. He looked at me, and he said, everybody knows the government smuggles drugs. He said, what's the big deal? He said, I was just in Costa Rica. They were loading drugs down there when I was there. You know, what do you want? Well, I had been cued that what do I want meant, like, what do I want to, like, get out, go away.
Yeah, and it was how much are you going to pay me to keep quiet sort of thing.
Well,
huh?
I mean, you know, I could have, you know, there was a time, I mean, I crafted a pretty good documentary, and I thought, I mean, I was so naive 9 years ago, I thought, well, here I am proving that this guy Barry Seal, who, I mean, you know, he was far more on the main line of the drug trade in the 80s than anyone Gary Webb wrote about.
Sure, absolutely.
That I'm gonna break this story that this guy was a lifelong CIA agent, and he was, and I proved it. And I thought, well, goddamn, you know, I mean, what do I say when I'm like accepting my Pulitzer Prize?
Yeah, except that they don't do that, as you know, Daniel. You know, they remember one of my favorite phrases, is that old Turkish proverb, he who tells the truth gets chased out of 9 villages. And you've told the truth. You know, not only the drug trade, Daniel, but one of the things that I really find fascinating and frankly admire about your work is the way you have diligently followed these evidentiary tributaries and historical elements back through time. And you have traced the genesis, and there's a pun there with your earlier comment about Genesis Intermedia, of a lot of this, or if not the genesis, certainly an awful lot of these things track through Dealey Plaza in 11-22-63, which is another taboo. You not only can't admit that there was a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination, you can't admit that it was a coup d'etat, and that beyond that, political murder has become an established way of life in this country. So you have cut across two total taboos, not only that, but September 11th, and linking that to elements associated with the Bush administration, that is another taboo. So when you basically hit the trifecta as far as what you're working on down there, you know.
When I got to Louisiana, I spent 2 years in Louisiana. I'm living with Barry Seal's widow, and she wanted to know who her husband had been.
Mm-hmm.
She was just a very lovely girl who knew nothing about what Barry did except that involved drugs. She knew he obviously worked for a much larger organization, but she didn't, you know, what that name was not something she was aware of. So she wanted it. Now, so she went around with me, opened doors, a lot of doors, for 2 years when I lived in Louisiana, and I quickly realized that I had lucked into. I mean, that Barry Seal was the main line. When you were talking about Seal and the people around him, you were in the heart of the country. So I got lucky quick. And since then, but you know, today the Kennedy assassination. You know, today the drug trade, as I've been able to track it, goes back to World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to. I mean, you know what? And I am not the first person. I mean, good Lord. It feels like when you discover something, it feels like breaking news, and then you learn that, like, you know, Dr. Albert McCoy, whatever his name is, wrote about it 30 years ago.
Alfred McCoy, yeah.
Yeah, in The Politics of Heroin. You know, I mean, I'm telling it to you like I discovered it. Well, I did discover it, but, you know, it had been discoveries that have been made before me.
One of the things you've done, Daniel, you're being falsely modest. Yeah, there have been a lot of books written about it, and for my money, the best of the lot, and he pays a big nod to Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, and that is The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Kruger, published in 1980, and that anticipates so much of what you investigated in decades subsequently. But you have made connections that other people haven't. You know, vis-a-vis the Kennedy assassination, for example, there was a CIA officer named Goldhill, I believe his last name was, and he was telling associates that he knew who'd killed Kennedy, that it was an element of the Central Intelligence Agency that was involved with drug trafficking. And he then was found shot to death, an apparent suicide, except the gun was in the wrong hand. I've forgotten whether he was a right-hander or a left-hander. And what you've done with Barry Seal, and then tracing, in turn, some of the planes and the elements involved in Barry Seal's operations, and they crop up in the background of some of the things that overlap Mohammed Atta. But you basically have given substance to that. And that too is absolutely something that's going to get you chased out of 9 villages or more if you give them a chance.
Well, you know what? It's an on the one hand, but on the other hand story, okay? On the one hand, this is a great country because I'm still alive.
Yep.
I can't think of any place else where someone who found out as much about the elite deviants that ran, and elite deviants run every country, but you know, wouldn't be dead. So I'm still here, and thank God for that. But on the other hand, stories that should be that I find out that should be, you know, major breaking news just never are. I mean, they just never are. If you had learned. We've talked many times about how the Venice airport was the nexus for the terrorist hijackers during their time in this country. If it had made the news at that time that the Venice airport itself had been a center of covert activity for 50 years before the terrorists got here. I mean, the first reference I found to the Venice airport was when was I think back in 1934. I found a clip from 1934 where a plane was discovered with loaded with heroin at the Venice airport. But certainly 50 years later, by 1975, the company was at the Venice airport.
Mm-hmm. Now we should clarify that, as a lot of people know that is a intelligence community shorthand slang for the CIA, and that may well have been the case here. But this was a particular operation, also known, well, basically, tell us about the company and Messrs. Chagra and company.
You can't talk about the company without starting with Sally Denton and her book,
The Bluegrass Conspiracy.
Absolutely, that's where I first heard the name of the company, and they were a it was probably the largest drug smuggling organization in the U.S. from the mid-70s to, God knows, you know, probably to the present day. And it was founded by 200 to 300 ex-special forces guys, ex-military intelligence, CIA, tons of ex-policemen, and a few ex-judges. So this was a connected group of people, obviously, because that is one of the four things that any successful drug trafficking organization needs. It needs production, it needs transportation, it needs distribution, and it needs protection. And without protection, it doesn't last very long.
It also needs something to a vehicle or vehicles in the case of significant operations through which to launder the money. That's a biggie.
Yeah, exactly. So the company was in Venice, and that is why Wally Hilliard was in Venice. They had in Venice. I interviewed a guy just not that long ago, who was involved with the company in Venice in the early 80s, and I found some great clips about him, and I called him out of the blue, and I said, look, I don't want to embarrass you. Today he's got, like, you know, today he's a pillar of the community. I said, I don't want to embarrass you. I'm not interested in doing that. I just want to get some background on the Venice airport. Well, he said, first words, the Venice was just like Mena. it was another Mena. Mena, Arkansas. So they had in place in Venice, and they probably still do, the major elements that we saw coalescing in Arkansas in the 1980s. You have to have, control of, like, the state police. You have to have judges. You have to have, you know, this and that. And what they had to begin with in Venice was the local newspaper. Now, I haven't written about this yet, but I'm going to, man. Do you know who owned the Venice? Do you know who owned the Sarasota Herald Tribune?
No.
Well, today it's owned by the New York Times.
Yeah.
But for the first 30 years, who founded it and who set the tone for Sarasota County for the next 30 years was a guy who dabbled, whose real job was as a defense contractor.
All right. So, in other words, basically, he had his bread buttered on the side of journalism and also on the side of military procurement.
Yeah. He built planes. He using the CIA, he sold a updated version of the P-51 from World War II all around the world, and that kind of plane is still extremely useful because it goes slow. I mean, jets don't go slow enough to do what planes like that can do. So that was pretty amazing. I mean, you know, to find out that the guy who founded the Sarasota Herald Tribune was journalism was his sideline, you know, and he was connected, and so was everyone else in our story. Michael Brassington is on trial right now in New Jersey, and he's charged with what happened, and the reason Michael Brassington is on trial is because when they screw up so bad that something has to happen, something happens. But not what you exactly want to happen, okay? Brassington owned a charter aircraft charter company that totally disregarded every rule in the book, okay? Did not maintain their planes to spec, hired pilots that weren't qualified, hired flight attendants who were strippers in Miami, and eventually caught up to them, and they had a plane crash at Teterboro Airport, right outside New York City. And so it made the national news that day. It plowed across the runway, through the airport fence, and across a busy six-lane highway at during morning rush hour. And that's when somebody said, "This has got to stop." And it wasn't the FAA. I mean, it was the NTSB. The NTSB stepped in and said, "This is just you guys have just done like the poorest job of regulation that we've ever seen."
It certainly sounds like it's up there with the top 10.
So he is now at the end of the third week of his trial, facing 27 counts of lying to federal officials, falsifying records, not maintaining planes, of endangering the traveling public, and which included in his case a lot of celebrities. I mean, he flew around everyone from Jay-Z to Bill Clinton. He flew around everyone from Beyonce to former President George Bush Sr. And you have to wonder, what's up with that?
Yeah, generally the Secret Service vets people who fly ex-presidents pretty carefully. And it sounds like in this case, either Brassington passed the vetting or somebody told them to look in a different direction.
Well, I'm looking at the he's on trial for 27 counts of endangering the public and lying to federal officials, and for a number of years. Is he just like a bad seed? And they say that he did it because he was greedy. Well, he didn't do it because he was greedy. He did it because he was protected. He did it because what you find with CIA connected aircraft contractors is they crash a lot. Okay? They have a lot of plane crashes. And that's because they just disregard the rules do not apply to them. You know, and that's what I'm really on about. I mean, equal justice under law is probably a nice idea, and you know, might be nice if we ever had it. But we don't live in that kind of country anymore. We live in a country where some people are above the law.
Basically, might makes right, and might in this case being economic power, which translates directly into political power.
Well, you know, I guess so. Okay, I guess. I mean, I'm sure you're correct in your analysis. All I know is the same people are involved. Okay, Wally Hilliard, for example. Okay, why we're interested in Michael Brassington is because he worked for Wally Hilliard, and what I find in the trial documents is one document that says that the FAA special investigator that investigated the crash at Teterboro was not allowed to go anywhere, speak to anyone, without somebody from the Joint Terrorism Task Force accompanying him. Now, I already know because you'll see in this documentary, a U.S. Customs agent told me that he saw it right in the computer. I mean, Brassington had a letter from the number three customs official, a letter to present to customs agents when he entered the country. You know, saying this guy's cool, basically. You know,
and now let me just backtrack and make sure I understood you correctly. When anyone, journalistic or otherwise, is going to interview Brassington, they have to have somebody or someone from the Joint Terrorism Task Force has to be present.
Well, no, that's not what this document says. The document, but close. The document I found in the court proceedings that are going on now at the U.S. District Court in New Jersey. Includes one document in which Brassington and his lawyers are filing a motion that nothing be said during the trial about the fact that the FAA special investigator was not allowed to question anyone without someone from the Joint Terrorism Task Force present. And so Brassington's lawyer is saying, well, this is, you know, mention of terrorism is going to prejudice the case. This has got nothing to do with terrorism. Like, I want to keep, you know, filing a motion to, like, keep that out. This is a pretrial motion. Well, that ties back to like what I already know. I mean, a U.S. Customs agent telling me on the pressing of a letter from the number three guy in customs saying this guy's cool, and yet when the customs agent looked down at his computer screen, There was a big red mark next to his name from the DEA that he should receive special scrutiny from the DEA, that he had been busted and proving what I wrote in Welcome to Terrorland. He had been the co-pilot on Wally Hilliard's plane, busted with 43 pounds of heroin. So you want to check a guy like that. So what happened is the U.S. Customs agent was new. He was a rookie. But he was in charge that night because everyone else was taking the night off. And so what he did was he looked down and he saw the contact agent, someone that's of special interest to an agency of the U.S. government, has a contact agent. And if you have any questions about this fellow, here's the guy you call. So he called the contact agent, nice supervisor in Miami by the name of Norm Peters, and asked, what do I do? I got this letter from, all of our bosses up in Washington saying this guy's cool, and yet there's this DEA thing. And the customs supervisor said, treat him like a grave threat to national security. Called Michael Brassington a grave threat to the national security of the United States of America. This is a longtime employee of the guy that owned the flight school where the terrorists learned to fly.
And it sounds very much like what was said about Wolfgang Boehringer, who also was a grave threat to national security.
And it all ties back. I mean, I can tell you where Wolfgang Boehringer and Michael or Francis Brassington intersect. But first I'm going to tell you we're talking about the friends of Wally Hilliard, okay? That's what I call them in the documentary, because if I could go to a parking lot and walk around and find a CIA parking sticker, on all these guys' cars, that would prove something. But, of course, you can't do that. So you've got to find all these people acting in concert, and then you've got to draw your own conclusions. That's what I've done. And I call them the friends of Wally Hilliard because I don't know what else to call them. They're obviously like CIA connected. Wally Hilliard himself got rich working for the CIA. When his company was bought back in the early 80s by a guy who had been an OSS agent and later went on to found a restaurant in San Francisco with George Shultz.
Really?
And Gordon Getty. And Gordon Getty.
is that guy's first name begin with the letter M?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's dead now.
Myron Dubain. Okay.
You can say his name. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Myron Dubain. I'm looking at Hilliard's connections, and I know lots of things about him. He was a partner in a company called Spatial that was manufacturing apparently LCD screens. But of course, the company went bankrupt. Okay. None of the companies these people are associated with last very long.
By the way, Daniel, speaking of not lasting long, let's hold that thought because we're down to about the last 25 seconds on this side. Can people order New American Drug Lords through how can they get it?
Well, I'm just off my website.
All right, madcowprod.com, also where you can find the many overlapping and intersecting articles that Daniel has written over the last decade or so. Plus, you can also order Barry and the Boys. Or is Barry and the Boys still out of print?
I got to get it back in print somehow. I'll talk to you about that in the next half hour.
All right. But you can definitely order the new edition of Welcome to Terrorland.
Correct.
So we have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, and this concludes side one of For the Record program number 728, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Tricky Treats. This program is being recorded on October 30th of the year 2010. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.